I'm Austin White with White Farms in Vernon, Texas. You're listening to the latest news in Texas agriculture on Texas Ag Today.
This is Texas Ag Today, the number one source for the latest news in Texas agriculture. The largest and most experienced farm news team in the Lone Star State covers it all. From the piney woods of East Texas to the rocky ranges of the Trans-Pecos, and from the Panhandle down to the Rio Grande Valley. Here's today's top stories.
Getting a farm bill passed won't be easy. House Ag Committee Chairman G.T. Thompson recently shared with us the challenges the five-year food and farm legislation faces. I'm Jessica Domel, and I'll have more from Washington, D.C. coming up on Texas Ag Today.
Finding ways to produce good crops and conserve water is the focus of research being conducted by a groundwater conservation district in the Texas Panhandle. I'm James Hunt, and we'll talk about that on Texas Ag Today.
Persistent winds and increasing daytime temperatures are rapidly drying out soil moisture across the coastal bend. This is Harvey Buring reporting from the Corpus Christi area.
Now, here's the host of Texas Ag Today, Carrie Martin.
Hello, Texas. Why don't you jump on in with me and buckle up? We're going to take a ride around the Lone Star State as we cover the most important industry in this greatest state in the nation, Texas agriculture. Be sure to hold on tight because it all starts right now. A group of Texas ranchers and landowners took a legal case all the way to the Supreme Court and received a unanimous ruling in their favor. But did they actually win anything? It is a confusing case, so we asked Texas A&M Ag Law Specialist Tiffany Dowell-Lashmit to explain it.
The plaintiffs are actually about 120 landowners who own property on the east side of Houston, kind of in Jefferson and Chambers counties, and all their property is on the north side of I-10. The lawsuit involves their claim that when the Texas Department of Transportation did a kind of a widening project on I-10, that resulted in, when rain events happened, their properties being flooded. And so they filed a takings claim against the state of Texas, arguing that that construction resulted in the taking of their private property. They ended up in the U.S. Supreme Court on really kind of a technical issue, and that is whether or not they can bring a claim under both the Texas Constitution and the U.S. Constitution. In particular, the question dealt with the Supreme Court dealt with that U.S. constitutional claim. And the state of Texas had said that the plaintiffs couldn't bring that claim unless they had a specific statute that they were relying on, kind of as the vehicle to bring that claim. The plaintiffs took the position that they could bring that claim directly under the Fifth Amendment. They said that the Fifth Amendment is self-executing and they didn't have to have a separate statutory basis.
So what does the favorable ruling actually mean?
Honestly, they kind of didn't answer the question. They kicked the can down the road a little bit. What the justices said was they don't have to answer the question of whether you can bring a claim directly under the Fifth Amendment, because in this case, there's already a statute, Texas state law claim for inverse condemnation. And because there's that state law claim that can be the vehicle for that Fifth Amendment claim, the court just said they didn't have to answer the question of whether you could bring one in absence of that. The outcome is that the plaintiff landowners are able to proceed with both their state constitution and United States constitutional claims. But big picture, we didn't get an answer to the question of whether that Fifth Amendment claim can be self-executing or not.
While the verdict was unanimous in favor of the ranchers and landowners, both sides are claiming victory. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton says the ruling protects the ability of Texas to handle compensation duties under state law for any alleged taken property. He says he's pleased that citizens can sue for takings under Texas law. A bipartisan group of lawmakers spoke with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken about the lack of water payments from Mexico and the effect it's having on the Rio Grande Valley. Many valley farmers are unable to grow a crop this year because there's no water due to Mexico's delinquent water payments. The call included Senator John Cornyn, Republican Representatives Tony Gonzalez and Monica de la Cruz, as well as Democratic Congressman Henry Cuellar and Vicente Gonzalez. Reports say the discussion dealt with how to force Mexico to repay its water debt under the 1944 International Water Treaty. Getting a farm bill passed this year won't be easy. Jessica Domo reports from Washington, D.C.
House Agriculture Committee Chair G.T. Thompson and Senate Ag Committee Ranking Member John Bozeman gave Texas farmers and ranchers an update on the Farm Bill this week in Washington, D.C. Thompson reiterated what he told reporters last week. He intends to have movement on the Farm Bill in the House Ag Committee in the coming weeks.
Without a doubt, we're going to pass out of the House Agriculture Committee a Farm Bill before Memorial Day. We have been working on this with due diligence now for 2 years and 4 months.
Thompson said Monday on the House floor, lawmakers spoke about the importance of the Farm Bill. He said despite support from some lawmakers already, getting the 5-year food and farm legislation through Congress won't be without challenges.
Farm bills are always unique in terms of their challenges they have. There's detours and potholes, and none of them ever are progress in the same way. They're all kind of different, and this time around has its unique challenges. I mean, we're the first time we're trying to do a farm bill where we fired the Speaker of the House, which puts you into absolutely paralyzes Congress, the House, for being able to do anything for a period of time. We have the smallest majority in history, one person, never had that before. Of the 435 members of Congress, over half have never debated or voted on a farm bill before. That's a unique challenge, requires a lot of education to bring people up to speed. And I could go on with some other ones, but it's not to say it's insurmountable. I feel really positive, mostly because of the product that we have developed in the House, listening to your voices.
The chairman said they have heard loud and clear from farmers and ranchers that the safety net needs to be updated and crop insurance needs to be affordable.
Those were really among the top priorities that we heard as we traveled around. So I remain very optimistic. Definitely, without a doubt, we'll be passing a farm bill out of the committee before Memorial Day, and then we're going to find a pathway to the House floor, and we'll go from there.
That was House Ag Committee Chairman G.T. Thompson. Reporting from the nation's capital for the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network, I am Jessica Domel.
A groundwater conservation district in the Texas Panhandle is researching ways to produce good crops while conserving water. James Hunt has the story.
For several years now, the North Plains Groundwater Conservation District has been studying the water use impact resulting from a rotation of two of the region's most prominent crops. The district's assistant general manager, Kirk Welch, says the research is being conducted at the district's Water Conservation Center in Eder.
We've got a half a section basically to work with out there, which is two center pivots and some subsurface drip irrigation as well. So the idea was to get into a consistent rotation between cotton and corn on each of the pivots as well as the two subsurface drip plots.
Welch says what's been showing up in the research is that this rotation allows for the effective use of water over a two-season period.
What the corn leaves behind, because it does not dive as deep or have as much of an ability to attract and actually bring the water out of the soil, what the corn leaves behind, the cotton will take advantage of in the next season.
And with cotton's ability to capture water left behind by the prior corn crop, the research suggests the water district's conservation standards can be maintained even as the crops produce good yields.
What we see is a complementary relationship in water use that was bringing us in even below the 18-inch per acre allowable for farmers within the district. And so we were coming in somewhere around 15 inches 2-year average.
And as the research continues, Kirk Welch says this year the North Plains District is adding sorghum silage to the rotation study. Looking forward to hearing the results of the expanded research. I'm James Hunt on the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
Persistent winds and increasing temperatures are quickly drying out the Texas coastal bend. Harvey Buring has an update from Corpus Christi.
Well, dry and windy conditions have been prevalent here in the coastal bend during about the last 4 weeks, and at least 5 out of 7 of those days during the first 3 weeks of April have had extremely windy conditions. Winds between 20 and 40 miles an hour during those days, and you combine that with increasing temperatures each day and the evaporation rates soar and soil moisture depletes. Fortunately, here in the Coastal Bend, we did get off to a very good start with some early planting. That early planting allowed plants to sustain much of the windy conditions. Our corn now chest high, a few early planted fields showing the occasional tassel, our grain sorghum up hip high, and cotton producing good growth during the last couple of weeks with 8 to 10 leaves, all taking the windy days, but the soil moisture disappearing rapidly. And that lack of a significant rainfall event during the early part of April is resulting in a situation that most producers are concerned about, and that's the decline in the yield potential if we do not have some significant general rains across the Coastal Bend during the next 10 days. Those high winds and warmer daytime temperatures have also taken a toll on our pasture conditions. Rapidly declining grazing is underway here in the Coastal Bend, but fortunately, cattle came out of the winter in above average body condition, and those weeks of good grazing during March have maintained this body condition while pastures are declining. But the only thing that'll cure those conditions will be rainfall, and rainfall is something that the Coastal Bend typically needs during mid-April and mid-May to ensure a good crop year.
Reporting for Texas Ag Today from the Coastal Bend area, this has been Harvey Buring.
U.S. red meat export goals stress diversification and differentiation. I'm Tom Nicoletti, and I'll have a conversation with the chairman of the U.S. Meat Export Federation on Texas Ag Today.
And it's critical that all newborn calves drink colostrum. Veterinarian Dr. Bob Judd has more on that coming up.
These stories plus a look at the markets are straight ahead on Texas Ag Today.
If you're a Texas farmer or rancher with an unreimbursed loss from the recent wildfires, you can apply for assistance from the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. Unreimbursed losses include but are not limited to livestock, feed, fences, and equipment. Unreimbursed additional expenses such as temporary pastures will also be considered. Completed applications for assistance must be submitted by May 31st to a local county farm bureau office or directly to the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. For more details, go to texasfarmbureau.org.
Keeping Texas farmers and ranchers informed for over two decades, this is Texas Ag Today on the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
The U.S. Meat Export Federation has set goals for red meat exports here in 2024. Tom Nicoletti has the story.
Exports of U.S. red meat, beef, pork, and lamb continue to benefit American producers and international consumers. Texas producers have a large stake in red meat exports, with the state being number one in cattle production in the United States. Randy Sprock is chair of the U.S. Meat Export Federation and a pork producer in southwestern Minnesota. Sprock highlights the USMEF goals for exports moving forward in 2024.
I think it really comes down to the two Ds, differentiation and diversification. As we look at U.S. Meat Export Federation policies and what we do, it's about diversification. It's finding more than one market for each one of those primals or each one of those cuts to get the highest value to be able to return it back to the carcass cutout, whether it's beef, pork, or lamb. The other one we talk about would be differentiation. How do we separate U.S. product from any of our competitors' products in these foreign markets so that those consumers are going to want to come back to us continually here? So the two Ds, differentiation and diversification.
Sprong talks about producer participation during a recent USMEF trade mission to South Korea.
We had producers from many different states, from North Dakota, South Dakota, Texas, to Kentucky. And, you know, it's not only for them to see what their checkoff dollars are doing, but actually get put to work by the staff that's in country. We actually did a cooking demonstration, cooking steak, in front of 30 bloggers. And to see a producer from Kentucky season the steak, cook the steak, describe the steak, he had those bloggers eating out of the palm of their hand. So to have an actual producer of U.S. meat products over in a foreign country, have them show the consumer how to prepare that product, and then be able to one-on-one talk about their product and how it's produced, that's a very important aspect.
That is Randy Sprock. He is a chairman of the U.S. Meat Export Federation. I'm Tom Nicoletti at the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
it's critical that all newborn calves drink colostrum. Dr. Bob Judd tells why.
Dr. Madison Kovarna with South Dakota Extension indicates in Feedlot magazine that calves are born with almost no immunity, and the only immunity they have initially is from the colostrum they ingest within the first 24 hours of life. And without colostrum, most calves will not survive. In fact, calves that do not receive colostrum are 50 times more likely to die in the first 3 weeks of life compared to calves that receive adequate colostrum. This shows that making sure all newborn calves receive adequate colostrum in a timely manner is the most important thing you can do to save more calves. The antibodies are very large molecules, and the digestive system allows these large molecules to pass through the tissue walls and be absorbed into the circulation, but only up to about 24 hours. And because the absorption of the molecule starts decreasing after birth, it is ideal to get 2 quarts of colostrum in these calves within 4 hours after birth, and another 2 quarts at about 8 hours. Colostrum is the first milk produced by the cow and contains antibodies as well as other ingredients needed by the calf. The best source of colostrum is from the cow, but sometimes colostrum supplements or replacers must be used. Colostrum supplements and replacers are not the same thing, and the difference is important. Replacers can increase the blood concentration of immunoglobulins above 10 milligrams per mil, so these can be used without other colostrum sources. Supplements, on the other hand, are less expensive, but are lower in immunoglobulins and can only supplement the existing colostrum that may be in short supply or is poor quality. Colostrum can be stored at refrigerator temperature for 24 hours or in the freezer for up to 1 year and thaw in warm but not hot water.
I'm veterinarian Dr. Bob Judd. This is the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
We'll check the markets coming up next on Texas Ag Today.
If you're a Texas farmer or rancher with an unreimbursed loss from the recent wildfires, you can apply for assistance from the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. Unreimbursed losses include but are not limited to livestock, feed, fences, and equipment. Additional expenses such as temporary pastures will also be considered. Completed applications must be submitted by May 31st to your local county Farm Bureau office or directly to the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. For more details, go to TexasFarmBureau.org.
Here's the latest market information on Texas Ag Today.
Let's take a look back at how the markets wrapped up on Friday. We had the cattle complex going in different directions. We ended up with live cattle closing higher while feeder cattle closed lower. April live cattle up 30 cents to finish the week at 181.47. The June up 30, 175.67. August up 2, 173.55. Feeder cattle futures lower. April down 27 cents, 241.32. The May down 55, 242 even. With August feeders down 80, 253.50. Cash fed cattle sales quiet all week long. Packers had a lot of patience. Waited things out. Feedlots ended up selling cattle at 182. That's steady with the previous week. That's, of course, the price here in the South. When you look up at the Northern Plains, they had some live sales at 183, while dressed cattle sold for 292. Box beef prices higher. Choice up 13 cents, 295.93. Select up $1.80 at 291.07. Now let's check the auction barns. We're walking the pens with Larry Marble.
Jim Wheeler, Atascosa Livestock, Pleasanton, Texas, sells them every Tuesday. Jim, how'd the sale go there in the cowboy capital of Texas?
Market was decent. Cow market was, I believe they took $2 off from Monday, but packer market was still pretty good. Calf market looked like it might have been a little strong.
Well, walk the pens with us.
Ended up with 411, 182 were steers, 148 heifers, 55 cows, 22 bulls. Steer side, 2 to 3 weights, 245 to 335. Heifers were 235 to 305. 3 to 4 weight steers, 260 to 320. Heifers were 235 to $3. 4 to 5 weight steers, 240 to 310. Heifers were 230 to 270. 5-6 weight steers, 220 to 285. Heifers were 215 to 254. 6-7 weight steers, 205 to 250. Heifers were $2 to $2.35. 7-8 weight steers, $1.90 to $2.30. Heifers were $1.80 $1.80 to $2.05. 8 to 9 weight steers, $1.75 to $2.10. Heifers were $1.35 to $1.85. $2.66 on the packer cows this week. Best cow brought $1.39. Best bull brought $1.52. Few bred cows in the mix. There weren't many. They brought from $7.60 to $1,800.
All right. Tell everybody how to get a hold of you.
Reach us at 830-569-2516.
Jim, we appreciate you, and I'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, neighbor, I'll be darned if that's not it for this edition of Walking the Pens here on the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network. I'm Larry Marble. That was Jim Wheeler, and we do this every Monday through Friday. Thanks for listening. Good day.
Back over to the futures market, where lean hogs finished sharply higher Friday. May hogs were up $1.50, $96.22. June hogs up $2.12, $104.82. Class 3 milk steady to higher. April milk unchanged, $15.57 a hundredweight. The May contract up 46 cents, $17.84 a hundred. Well, the cotton market got pounded all week last week, sharply lower for the week. On Friday, things finally bounced back just a little bit. We had some shorts coming in and covering their positions. Also, some bottom pickers trying to find a bottom in this market after the big collapse over the last couple of weeks. May cotton up 59 points, closing at 78.69. July up 41, 81.02. While new crop December was up 14 points, 77.55 cents. Corn got a boost Friday on news that the EPA is going to allow summer sales of E15 fuel this year. We close with May corn up 6 3/4, 433.5. July corn up 6 3/4, 443 a bushel, with September corn up 6 1/4, 451 1/4. Both hard and soft wheat finishing higher. May Kansas City wheat up 4 1/4, 581.5. May Chicago wheat up 13.5 at 550 1/4. In the energy markets, May natural gas unchanged at $1.76. May West Texas crude up 50 cents, 83.23 a barrel. The financial markets mixed, with the Dow up 145 points, 37,921. The NASDAQ dropping 369 points, 15,228. While the S&P was down 55 at 4,955. That wraps up our look at the markets, and that wraps up this episode of Texas Ag Today. I'm Kerry Martin. Hope to see you back here next time as we cover the most important industry in this greatest state in the U.S. of A, Texas agriculture.
Thanks for joining us for Texas Ag Today. Be sure to follow the Texas Ag Today podcast, found wherever you listen to podcasts. For more Texas farm and ranch news, check out our website at texasfarmbureau.org or tfbradio.com. Texas Ag Today is a production of the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.